chairperson may exercise the powers of the chairperson. So after being elected, an acting chairperson will preside over this meeting and perform all functions assigned to the chairperson of a committee. Since I've indicated that the committee correct, I would like to call members to nominate an acting chairperson. I thank over to members. Honourable Mutara.
Thanks, Supervisor. I'd like to hereby nominate Honourable TJ De Beer to act as chairperson.
Okay, Honourable De Beer is nominated to act as an acting chairperson. Any Honourable Pandingan is seconding the nomination of Honourable De Beer as an acting chair. Is there any other member who wishes to nominate a second person? Honourable Gayla is nominating himself in second. Okay, in the absence of a member that is seconding Honourable Gayla as a member, I'd like to indicate that Honourable Didier has been nominated as the acting chairperson. Honourable, do you accept the nomination as the acting chair of this meeting?
Yes, Babalo, I do until the chairperson Muhai arrives.
Okay, thank you. Honourable Didi has been nominated as the acting chair until Honourable Muhai arrives. Thanks, Honourable Didi, you may take the lead chair. But before you do that, I will also like to indicate that my colleague, apparently we are experiencing the same challenge today. He must also elect an acting chair and preside in fact over the election of an acting chair. Thank you, over to you.
Thank you, colleague. Good morning, colleagues, members, as well as department. In the same vein, the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education has the chairperson not available, but she also has commitments. I'm going to also call upon a member of the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education to nominate an acting chairperson for decision, and I will open for nominations. Honourable Khosa.
Thanks, Chair. I rise to nominate Honourable Mokoto as the chairperson of the meeting.
Right, Honourable Khosa has nominated Honourable Mokoto as acting chairperson. Is there a second for the nomination? Seconded by Honourable Khosa. There are any further nominations? In the absence of which, I would also call upon Honourable Mokoto to be acting chairperson for the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education for this session. Thank you.
Thank you to the staff who conduct this session before we start with the actual work, and thank you, Acting Chairperson of the Standing Committee, to join me. To all members present from the National Assembly Standing Committee on Basic Education and the Select Committee on Education in the NCOP of the 20s here, as well as the members of the Select Committee on Appropriations. Welcome to this meeting. Just request to the people that works with the air conditioner, please switch this off. This room feels like the Northern Cape in summer. That's my province. So, yes, please. It's very uncomfortable, and we want to do our work in an environment that's conducive, that we be progressive. So turn down the heat, please. That's a serious request from myself.
Chair, I just want to ask that we properly record the actions of the minister and deputy minister. Whether they apologize or not, we must start keeping them accountable, and we need to record it up front.
Well, yes, I haven't seen any apologies because I came into this chair.
Yes, I do have apologies in taking rights from both the minister and deputy minister.
Yes, it's good to have a lady next to me chairing as well. It doesn't happen in a comedy in the NCOP. Thank you, honourable members. Just another point. one of our honorable members of our Select Committee on Finance Preparations, and the member of the National Council of Provinces, the Honorable Mbrandus, passed away last week. Let me notice a moment of silence, please, out of respect. Thank you. That he shall rest in peace. He was a noble member of this committee, and he added value to the work we did. Yes, I noted the Honorable Swani, the chairperson of the Student Committee on Basic Education in the NCOP. Honorable members, it's a serious matter we are dealing with this morning. The grants allocated by the National Treasury to infrastructure, also to address backlogs. Mr. Shishi, where are you? There you are. From the Treasury, familiar face in finance appropriations, that will take us through the presentation from the Treasury regarding the spending patterns, also looking at the history. Then the Department of Basic Education, welcome to them. Thank you for the rain that you brought to Cape Town. Coming from the right province in Northern Cape, this is like music for me when I hear it and see it falling. So welcome to you as well. We want to listen to you. All the members, I plead with you that we complete this meeting quarter one. There's plenary this afternoon, and some of us have other engagements between 1 and 2, and has to be seated at 2 o'clock in those houses. So let's try and finish off at quarter to 1, 12:45. Mr. Shishi, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and members of the Committee on Appropriations, and members of the Committee on Education, Portfolio Committee. Our presentation is just a brief reflection, a review on mostly the outcomes from last year, as well as certain trends observed over a period of time in respect of education infrastructure in the provinces. As I start my presentation, I wish to emphasize something that I'm sure many of you are aware of, but for everyone's information, the education infrastructure in the country is funded through several what we might call streams of funding. So as I go through the presentation, we will be reflecting on those streams of funding, namely the Education Infrastructure Grant, which is a grant allocated to 9 provinces in the country for them to supplement their education infrastructure budgeting. Secondly, the equitable share funding, which is the formula-driven funding that provinces get and they budget at their own discretion on. And some of that money, obviously, most of that money goes to social services and some of it goes to education infrastructure. And then finally, the ACD program, although my colleagues from the National Department of Basic Education will reflect on that in perhaps more detail. So then, without much further ado, let me move on. The first slide shows what the spending was at the end of the recently concluded financial year. In total, infrastructure spending in education across the provinces. And this combines all of the different streams of funding that I just spoke about. And so that is, I suppose, as you can see in terms of information, there are 2 provinces that in the year-end report reflected overspending on infrastructure, and that is the Northern Cape, which reflected 101.9% spending, in other words, overspent by 1.9%, and of course, as you can see, the Western Cape, a 3% over expenditure. Overall, most provinces spent very well, except provinces that were, I would say, in the 80s or 70s, such as the Free State, which spent 78%, and Mpumalanga, which spent 24.9%, and then 2 provinces that spent in the 80s, which is the Eastern Cape and the Northwest Province. Next slide then begins to drill down and split things up let's start by looking at the education infrastructure.
Some of us will take that presentation.
Honourable members, do you have this? Please stop. Assist. I've got two. Here's another extra copy for a member. Thank you. Right. Can we take off?
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Chairperson. So this is the Education Infrastructure Grant in the Division of Revenue Act. And you can see there how the grant was spent in the last year. And Limpopo, having come from quite a bit of low spending in previous years, has shot up fairly dramatically this past year, and then actually ended up overspending on the grant. Mpumalanga and the Northern Cape, as well as KwaZulu-Natal, fully spent their budget, as well as other provinces sitting in the 90s. But again, as I previously mentioned, the Free State in this grant has also been a fairly low spender, to some extent the Eastern Cape as well, and at 86.1% the Northwest Province, which can clearly do more. Then the other stream of funding is the School Infrastructure Backlogs Grant, otherwise sort of referred to as part of the CD program. And what basically this shows is that since 2011-12, where we had some fairly poor spending on this grant, there has been some significant improvement, leading to effectively 100% spending in this past financial year. This grant, just to remind everybody, is not a grant that is allocated to the provinces. This is what is called an indirect grant, which means that the national department spends the money on behalf of provinces in respect of addressing those particular backlogs, whether they be backlogs in actual school building that was not there in appropriate structures, or, for instance, backlogs in other areas such as functionality, evolution blocks that are out there, and things of that nature. And so there's been quite an improvement in spending on this grant, as we can see. In fact, there's a 0.1% overspending, which I'll reflect on later, mostly coming out of the goods and services component. Now, what we did is we looked at what is the proportional contribution between what provinces get in terms of the conditional grant and their own contribution from their equitable share or unconditional funding for the purposes of education infrastructure. And we ran this over a period of 3 years, in other words, this upcoming MTF. And that graph basically shows that the blue parts are the equitable share funding and the red part is the grant funding. And what it basically shows is that certainly in the current financial year that we've just ended, with the exception of Gauteng province, as well as to a lesser extent was KwaZulu-Natal, Western Cape, but certainly with the exception of Gauteng province, provinces have become heavily dependent on grant funding in order to do education infrastructure and are investing very little of their own money in actually delivering on this infrastructure. And if you look at the years that follow, 16-17, you can actually see that it gets even worse in a number of provinces. For instance, by the time we get to 17-18, the Eastern Cape will spend nothing, as well as Limpopo, from its own funds on education infrastructure, and for that matter, the Northern Cape as well will have a fairly notional contribution rather than anything significant. To some extent, the reasons for this are the pressures that are in the system in respect of wage costs in provinces. Just a brief aside, as honorable members would know, the majority of civil servants in the country work for provinces, health and education. And so the wage bill and the cost of salaries, it tends to fall more heavier on provinces than it does on the national sphere of government. And so part of the explanation for this is that as the wage costs rise, provinces begin to take more and more money, the equitable share portion, out of the infrastructure funding and put it there, and as a result, these are the trends that we begin to see, where heavy dependence on grants is reflected in the system. Moving on then to the actual projects and the project status information that is reported to us by both the national department as well as provinces. I'm not going to go through this very long list that people can read for themselves, but essentially what it shows is the types of infrastructure projects. Again, this is education specific. The types of infrastructure projects, the types of things that people are dealing with. And you can see there in terms of the number of projects, just the second column, that of course the majority of projects are in respect of primary schools and secondary schools, although there is of course a significant amount of work being done around sanitation, in other words, toilet facilities in our schools. In addition to that, other things, admin blocks, fencing and so forth, such as that's the information. The rest of the columns basically divide all of those infrastructure projects into the different phases or status in which they're in. So for instance, some projects will be in pre-feasibility or feasibility, so obviously there's a lot of planning activity still going on there, as well as things like design, all the way to the columns on the right, which talk more about where they are in terms of completion and whether a project, for instance, will be on hold. It can happen if there's a problem with a particular project, if there's a quality issue, for instance, or something that's been delivered. It can be put on hold, the contract can be called back, to other things of that nature. That's what that reflects, in summary, in the system. The next slide reflects the project status again for the same number of projects, but in a sort of a different type of summary which is called the nature of investment summary, rather than the type of infrastructure summary. So you can see that a big chunk of these budgets are actually upgrades and additions to existing schools. And the second biggest lot is the new or replacement infrastructure, where a brand new school is being built, either where there hasn't been a school before, or where the previous school was inappropriate, so-called mud house or things of that nature, that is being replaced. There's 551 maintenance and repairs to schools there. We do have a couple where we're still engaging between the provinces and the national department to clarify what the nature of investment is, because in the system, but the details weren't fully captured. But that's what's reflected in the report.
May I just raise a point of clarity, please? These two last two slides that we looked at, what period, what number is reflected, what area is reflected in the numbers? Where do these numbers come from? 443 administrative blocks, from what period, over what period? Thank you.
I've got a request that if you know something you want to ask, let's ask it after Mr. Shishi's presentation. It's a very important question there.
I think it's a pretty easy question to answer, so I don't mind. It's over a period of time. So some projects are multi-year, quite a number of projects are multi-year. So what we've done here is we've taken all of them because for various reasons. For instance, a lot of our schools at the moment on average are taking actually 2 years to build rather than one. So it would, a lot of them are actually starting from the previous period in which to put them together. And because they're multi-year, they tend to run over. And there's various reasons why that's the case, and I'll get into that in a later discussion.
I think just clarify your period of time, which is a period of time, if you can try the.
So we're starting in respect of, it varies quite a bit, my colleagues said it. So from 2011, quite a lot, all the CD programs, in other words, the backlog grant, they start from that period. So essentially 2011 up until today for that purpose. But of course, it's important, it does get a little bit more complicated than that, even in the sense that education infrastructure grant has been in existence since before that. So it's quite possible that some of those projects where there's been egregious failure in delivery are part of that number. But most of them are coming from that period of 2011 up until today. Okay. Then just looking at the challenges and issues in the provinces where there are challenges and issues in terms of delivery. So I started off in my presentation by reflecting on the actual spending numbers and who's performed well and who hasn't performed well. And so in looking at the people that have not performed well, these are some of the issues that we are picking up in each of those provinces. Firstly, looking at Eastern Cape, one of the major delivery agents in the Eastern Cape that's being used by education is the Kuka Development Corporation, the CDC, which is a provincial entity that does infrastructure projects that's being used as an implementing agent. They have apparently experienced delays in the management of their procurement process. And as a result of that, of course, the project itself doesn't start on time and so on and so forth. So that's been an issue there in the Eastern Cape. And then the second issue, a major issue that's come up is this problem of where a contractor has been awarded a contract and they start doing work, but they fail in terms of either quality or just the simple process of delivery. And then you have to obviously then go through a whole process where you've got to terminate that contract because that person is not delivering, you've got to find another contract and so forth, and that obviously will cause the actual budget to be delayed. And that's been an issue in the UK. In the Free State province, one of the things that's a feature here is that projects are clustered into what you almost call like programs. So what will happen is that you will have a contract awarded for a series of projects rather than just one. Which means that if that particular delivery implementing agent struggles in one, all the others will have a problem. And so that's been an issue there. There are 558 projects in the design phase, while 38 have begun construction. So part of our project have actually started construction and still in design, which implies that we're actually not going to have those projects completed anytime soon. And then the third problem is, it's been in the news lately, and we obviously have been dealing with the province on this issue very closely as the National Treasury. We're in the province to engage with the officials at quite a high level last week on Friday. The provincial education department in the Free State is in crisis. And as a result of that, the department has been placed under administration by the provincial treasury. But the consequence of all of these problems is that the cash flow problems in the department have meant that projects in respect of infrastructure have also suffered because of the management, really the management collapse in that particular provincial department. Then in the northwest, which is the other province where we've seen problems, is there have been delays in the appointment of the actual contractors. And that has obviously had an impact in the starting of projects and the conclusion. Secondly, various problems in respect of the local communities, the relationship between the people doing the work in the local communities, where there's been protests. Have also caused delays in respect of two major projects in that particular province. There was a decision by the provincial cabinet to transfer all projects from any other implementing agent to the public works department, the provincial public works department. It is a political decision, but the consequence of that, of course, was that the public works department was suddenly given these projects. Obviously, it now means that things don't move at the speed that you hoped they would. People are starting again and so on and so forth. And that obviously that will have an impact. And then finally, once again, in the Northwest, like in the Eastern Cape, we've had this problem of contractors that have been appointed, but they don't perform up to scratch. And then you end up going into this process of having to deal with that problem as well. And then finally, Mpumalanga has been the other province where we've noticed some difficulties. New projects delayed due to planning not done on time. And so obviously, if you don't get the plans done properly, or the quality of the plan is poor and you have to start them again, obviously that will delay the actual construction between the department and the
implementing agent, that would be a problem. And then finally, delays in monthly project due to poor performance by some contractors. Yet again, this problem of contractors not performing up to scratch has also influenced the progress in Mpumalanga. So, listen, I think I will leave it at that. Just the closing remarks there, that obviously from our side, we monitor the spending and how things are going on the fiscal side, but we try to gather information as well on what's happening in respect of the project. We have initiated this year infrastructure visits as well as National Treasury, where we're starting to go and see the project ourselves to see what's happening on not only in education but other sectors, but certainly education is one of the major focus areas. So that obviously we can try and assist where we can in trying to improve the performance of the program. And with that, Chair, I will thank you very much for the committee's time, and I'll hand it back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Shishi. The presentation you made is focusing on 31st March 2015, the period 2014-15, going to page to slide 3, going to slide 5, 15-16, etc. Honourable members, do you have the copy of the research unit? Why? The reason I'm asking you is that the research unit, the researchers went back to 2011-2012, because it's important to get some history, to get a trend. What happened in the past since those grants were implemented. So to the staff, please see to it that the honourable members, also from the National Assembly, from the Select Committee on Basic Education, get this document. It's very important, because it gives that other picture, which is actually needed. Specifically when we go after July into the BRRR process, the history of the department is crucial when evaluating the annual report of that specific financial year. Otherwise, it actually means nothing. So, please see to that that the other members get this. I'm going to allow 15 minutes for clarity. Are there any questions to Treasury? Just introduce yourself, please. That's for the sake of the minutes and for the presenter. Number one there at the bottom on my right hand side, coming up. 2, 3, 4. Mr. Gaila from Tata, 5. It's raining in the Eastern Cape of 5. Can I start, honourable member, please?
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Ramachai Tafong. Did I mention the fact?
Just speak into the mic.
Yeah, I'm Ramachai Tafong, President of the Commission. I just want to share to get from Mr. Shishi, he's saying a lot of money is going into salaries. That's number one. Then on the other side now, teachers in particular are getting low salaries. Can you just reconcile these two? A lot of money going into salaries, then low salaries on the side of teachers. Can you reconcile those two, please? Thank you very much.
Sorry, this is also just a question of clarity, Chair. In the table, the first table that's headed project status by, headed by type of infrastructure as of 31st March, there are two rows which have zeros in them, and they are technical workshops and grade R. Is that actually the fact, that there have been no technical I know there have been grade R classrooms, because I've seen them at PD schools. So, can you explain that, and the technical workshop, is that actually a proper reflection? Thank you. Chair, thanks for you. May I just also ask from friends each side if they speak up that some of these grants are actually also used for other things like paying salaries in different provinces. We see that happening all over. And then I'm really surprised that under challenges there's nothing about Limpopo. And if you are on the road to see for yourself projects, then I know you would notice that there are many, many newly built empty schools in Limpopo province where I believe there could be some legal cases. Either the contractors were paid or they left for whatever reason. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, colleagues. I would like to find out schools specialized. Are these for ALSE schools, learners with special education needs? I find it very strange that you have 261 projects, but completion, final completions, only 26. That is absolutely shocking. And something else that bothers me is the fact that we have many zeros under tender. If there was no tender process, how can somebody then take a contract forward? And then I'd also like to know, with regard to the salaries, what is the norm per education department, the provincial education departments, because you normally have a norm on what you may spend for salaries and wages. And then with regard to the challenges that we face with regard to contracts, could we be told how the process is run? It would appear if there are so many problems with regard to the awarding of contracts that we're not following due processes or that it's not transparent. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Shepard. I'll try to stick to your presentation, although I'd like to tell more. Let us start with your presentation.
Sorry, Honourable Bugaila, some of these questions will overlap into the certain presentation by the department, so the department must please note this cross-cutting. You proceed, please.
In the recent case, you say what procurement challenges. If you remember very well, finance, before you used to use IDT, then you brought in PUCA and TPSD. Because you then say that you have a problem with IDT, they're not delivering in time ever. Now, would you say now, ever since you've taken out IT and you've brought it to, I think much better. Now, if then you say things are much better, the procurement problems you have, how then do you have procurement? Secondly, on the fifth day you talk of clustering. Now, you're sitting with the government policy on one side. The government policy is very clear that you must develop an emerging sector. You've got that policy, our government policy, that you have to, now, if you cluster the process, is that developing the emerging sector? You cluster them in this sense. When you cluster, you have five schools in one contract. You've done that in the Eastern Cape, and it has failed with the TBSA, the city process. You cluster them and it has failed. And then you have to go back to the emerging sector to pull out of that mensa. Now, if you think that clustering is the better option, but you must also remember that you got the emerging sector which you have to assist. Secondly, are you working with the government entities? The government has got a lot of entities. One of them is CIDD, and you also got an entity for professionals. And furthermore, in the last couple of months, you haven't been paying your service providers in the Eastern Cape. TBSA has not been paying the service providers. That's the hook of the letter. Now, how then do you expect those people to complete their working time, especially the emerging sector, which you know very well, it is government policy to pay through within 30 days. Just let me take those. There are more, but let me take those for
you. I want to ask you, Honorable Gaila, that you write down specifics if you refer to your province. If there are specific examples, like, for example, Williamstown, Queenstown, Aliwal North, give specifics to the department, just write it down. Then the staff can hand it to the DG.
Can I,
Honorable Swani, and Honorable Van Lennep?
Can I just... That knows what I'm talking about. I know some of the staff here as well. They know where the problem is.
Which one?
Let me welcome the presentation. It has been clarified to a number of issues. However, I heard the presenter say that the infrastructure is actually taken care of by a variety of things, but it didn't make mention of all of those issues. It will be the provinces' own infrastructure funds, your grants by national and which other assets in infrastructure and development. Secondly, there was a slide where you showed that provinces have got a tendency, or some of them at least, have a tendency of relying only on the grants, and they don't make provision from their own funding to ensure that there is a infrastructure development for education. Is there no way that Treasury could actually insist somehow? I don't know the truth of the situation to say that you will have to make provision for infrastructure grants to establish your RPG so that everybody has got a similar kind of commitment. The other issue is all the slides that show the project data by type of infrastructure. There you've got primary schools and secondary schools. Primary schools 5,269. Secondary schools 2,480. You say number projects. You haven't disaggregated information to give us a provincial perspective. Where are these projects in the provinces? Because this is language, this is the language you understand is NCOP. And then it goes on up to where it says cycle over to the contractor. From those thousands, I see only 16 and three, I can't understand. Will you please clarify that for me? And then lastly, when you talk about provinces, towards the end of your presentation, you say, for instance, I'm citing an example, and then you say, UHA, development released in the procurement of contractors. It is UHA the only project implemented in the Eastern Cape. Are they the sole cause of delays insofar as the rolling out of projects is concerned, or there are other contractors that are employed? And lastly, if you just clarify to me how these grants work. You say national, correct me if I'm wrong, you said the national department spends their money on behalf of provinces. Did you say so? And if national spends the money, how does this work? Clarify to me what is the role of provinces? If you spend the money on their behalf, do they make commissions and you ensure that there is implementation as national? And then if that's the case, who takes final accountability in terms of my performance? Thank you.
Welcome, Mayor.
Thank you, Chair. This is the implementing agents are very often to blame. And what worries me is that when a contractor then fails, the project is stopped and it is not delivered upon. And when I'm talking specifically in Koha and Kauhama, where in the previous financial year 41 classrooms were not completed. 41 mobile classrooms were not completed. I have not had a recent report. I'm looking at the one for 2014 and 15, and it's really of great concern. When I look at your presentation on page, I would say your slide number eight, that's one that's on the screen. You look at the third last column, then it doesn't look good when there are 81 projects on hold. Because how many of them are in the Eastern Cape? That's what worries me. And how many of them have been terminated? How many of them are in the Eastern Cape and how many of them are in the Free State? Your problem provinces. Because what is going to happen there? And to what extent is the fact that the Eastern Cape, the Free State Department of Education is placed under administration, what effect has that had on the school projects, and where are we going with that one? Okay, and that's enough for the summing. Thank you.
Honourable, I refer you to this document, the Division of Revenue Law, specifically page 29, the equitable share allocated to the provinces. Now, I come from the Northern Cape. The own revenue for the Northern Cape is showing 340 million rand. So they are totally dependent on the allocations from the National Treasury. And they use money from the equitable share to extend programs on food nutrition in schools in poor communities. I come from a very, very rural area in my province, in Namakwa. So that picture is very important, and I think that should be added to the financials to get that big picture. Where does education fit into this big picture? Get the relationship. The other point is the relationship between the Department of Basic Education and Public Works. If there are high schools, hostels, toilets are not working, they must have a letter from the regional director or manager to the regional director or manager of Public Works, indicating there's a problem. And that's why our business and schools come in as employees to pick it up. Otherwise, the letter process might take 6 months. So our presence to schools as members of parliament or members of provincial legislature is crucial. Not once a year, at least 3 times a year. To pick up issues and pass it on to your MEC or through to the national and bring it to committees and the NA or the NCOP. That's the integrated approach. And we will have to do it to get performance. Because the NDP tells us that. I just want to give you that picture. But the relationship between the Department of Education, Basic Education, Public Works is crucial. It is very crucial. The issue about contractors. Look at the history of a contractor. What's his track record? Or her track record as a contractor. Use those people that give actual work. So that's part of the answer. And then Free State, yes. We will have to go there as NCOP, that's to our colleagues in the National Assembly Committee on Basic Education. We start on Friday with our engagement in finance with the 9 provincial treasurers on the fiscal position. But in that presentation, you get the bigger picture of what's happening in the departments. And then appropriations zoom into those specifics. That will eventually lead to the zooming in into education and nutrition. That's the process we follow in the NCOP, and that's being done on a quarterly basis, not once a year, on a quarterly basis, that we work actively together. We recognize the presence of Honorable Mohai. He's not the junior chairperson of his Select Committee for Appropriations. Welcome, Honorable Mohai. You experienced a bad weather coming into Cape Town, but thank you for the rain. I invite you to come to the front.
Please, about the question, which you can see in much better. I suggest you proceed.
Is that is fine with the members?
Yes.
Okay. It's all right. Honorable Mr. Shishi. Very honorable Shishi. Mr. Shishi.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. So, on the questions, I think just to dovetail in order to answer some of the other questions off of what Honorable Beer just said. Firstly, the questions are very good questions, and some of them are very tough. And some of them, I think, will best be answered by my colleagues from the National Department in respect of what's actually going on with their own sector work. But in any event, I will, as far as best as I can, go through each and every single one of the issues raised by the members. As Honorable Beer has pointed out, when we do a fiscal risk presentation to the NCOB Committee on Finance, we look at the broader issues in respect of each of the sectors. And the biggest, of course, is education in provinces. And so within that context, we would discuss issues of how it's growing, for instance, with the salaries bill and the compensation of employees, expenditure in these departments. And so if you take, I mean, the question around reconciling the salaries of the teachers and so forth, the loss of money going to compensation, I'm not 100% sure that I fully understand the question, but I'll do my best to articulate it very, very quickly. Imagine a situation, for instance, let's say we lived in an ideal world where we didn't have backlogs of infrastructure. We had all the schools that we needed, we had all the classrooms that we needed, and all that we did was focus on teaching. So the vast majority of our money would be spent on teacher salaries. That's what you'd be spending most of your money on, teaching. Unfortunately, that situation doesn't change just because you've got a budget. You still have to spend the money, most of the money, on salaries, because it's education. You can't put a robot in front of kids in a classroom. There has to be a teacher. You've got to pay that teacher's salary. So you will always have this, that there is the majority of money goes to salary. Now, there is a sort of a norm in respect of how much should be for salaries and how much should be for the other parts of the budget. It's normally sort of like an 80-20 type of split, where 80% of the money will go to salaries and 20% will go to everything else. Now, so the fact that we have these backlogs creates a complication that if you didn't have the backlog, you'd still be spending the money, most of it on salary. The fact that you got the backlog doesn't change the fact that you still have to spend most money on salary. So in other words, the budgets are squeezed. And so the way in which provinces budget and the way in which women budget is very, very tight indeed. And that's reflected in the slides that are there. So in some cases, what you'll find is we're working with provinces to get their budgeting better. Because in some cases, some provinces are not budgeting well enough to make sure the balance is right. In some cases, other provinces are budgeting well enough, but they are struggling because of the squeeze. So if you take, for instance, the education department in the Eastern Cape, on the one hand, the education department in the Eastern Cape does have a lot of management improvement to do, because there are management problems there. There's been a circulation of AODs coming in and out, a circulation of MECs and so on and so forth. But on the other hand, it is a fact that that's where a lot of backlog is. So inevitably, that budget will be squeezed. So managing carefully is going to be very, very important. And that's part of why we started doing these visits, to try and help the system move on. But the norms are there, and we're working with those norms as a basis for getting the numbers at the right place in respect of both the salaries and other types of spending. On the question about the absence of the technical workshops and grade art, I must point out, and perhaps just be upfront with the committee in saying that when we were putting this presentation together, we did limit the scope to some extent. So, for instance, there is another grant which was not part of the agenda, as were for the meeting, called the Technical Schools Grant, which is a totally separate grant that deals with issues of technical schools. I'm saying that we can bring that in, and there's a report that we can give on that. If that was required as an oversight, I do apologize. But it is a separate grant. That's not among the grants that are here that deals with technical assistance as well. In respect of the actual the types of schools or the types of funding streams, as I said at the beginning of my presentation, we're dealing here in this presentation with three funding streams. The one is the equitable share, which is the province's own money. The other one is the education infrastructure grant, which is grant money from national allocated onto provincial budget. And the third one is the school backlog grant, which is a grant but isn't allocated to province. So what happens is that the national department has to make sure, together with each of the provincial departments, that there's proper alignment of projects. So if a project is being funded from the education infrastructure grant on the province's budget, in the Eastern Cape for instance, and the national department is sitting with money that it's going to spend for the purposes of backlog, the national department and the provincial department of education have to come together to make sure that they don't duplicate their funding.
Because in the national department, there is a function to manage projects, to manage the process of getting the procurement to move and so forth. But in the province, there's also a process to manage procurement, to manage projects in respect of the different funding streams. So there is a complexity in the system because of these different funding streams. But what it does mean is that both parties have to come together to coordinate so that things don't get duplicated and become even more confusing. The answer on the specialized schools, yes, those are special schools that are being built. On the issue of the failure of the contract, this is a problem that is there not just in education, but it's there in just about everywhere where we're dealing with infrastructure.
But we must address the problem.
And
we must come up with a solution. I'm hearing for 6 years the same point. It's a problem. The point is we must come up with a solution, in this case the both committees, to take this thing forward. We'll carry on with this.
Thank you, Chairperson. So, part of the reason why we brought the DBSA into the project was to deal with these difficulties, to help us on the management side of things and on the planning side of things, so that we can unblock these blockages that are happening in the system. Members may recall that when the SCD program was started, it was started specifically because of the failure of some provincial departments to move quickly enough in respect of delivering schools, in respect of fixing schools that were not functional, and so on and so forth. And so it's been a process. Now, when we started, we knew that we were going to have problems, and we did have major problems. Spending on the grant was only 10% in the first year. But now we're starting to see some improvements in terms of the delivery. But for sure, Chairperson, we take the point about the problems, and it's something that is on our radar screen to deal with together with the national department. And that's why we've brought these partners on board, even though we recognize that, unfortunately, it does take a bit longer than we would like. There was a question on the implementing agency, such as IDP. I think my colleagues from the National Department will also deal with that. If you look at the system across the board, we haven't specifically said we're throwing up IDP across the country. So IDP, for instance, is still doing projects in, for instance, Limpopo and a couple of other places. So there are a number of places where IDP is still doing projects. Basically, there's a number of implementing agents here. We've got Kukhali in here, we've got IDP in a number of places, we've got other private companies that are also assisting that are there. So IDP is still there in a number of projects. And for that matter, so is the CIDB. In fact, the CIDB was the primary player in helping us put together the infrastructure delivery management system that we are now starting to roll out across the 9 provinces in the country in order to deliver the system better. There was a question about whether or not money from the grant is being used to pay salaries. What we did, I think about 2 years ago, is we recognized that there were major capacity constraints in the provinces to actually manage the project. And so we took a portion of the grant, and it's in the Division of Revenue Bill, in fact it was in the Division of Revenue Bill back in 2013, and we said a percentage of the money can be used to build capacity in departments in order to make sure that there's sufficient capacity to actually manage the budget. There's no point in just having projects but not having the management of it in place. And so for that reason, you will find that if you look at the numbers, there is a certain portion coming out of the funding stream that actually pays the remuneration of those people that are there to manage those particular projects. On the non-payment of service provided in the Eastern Cape, This issue of non-payment, I think, has now been lifted up as one of the major issues that we have to monitor and that we have to reduce the amount of unpaid invoices in the system, particularly given the fact that by law we have to pay within 30 days. And we can't as government breaking our own law. So we've been monitoring the numbers in the Eastern Cape in particular. We are noticing that they are coming down. So I think that we are making progress, and I shared some figures with the Budget Council a couple of weeks ago showing, even though in general they are going up, in the Eastern Cape in particular, we noticed that there is a downward trend. But that issue is definitely something that that is on the radar soon for us to address in terms of a slow payment to service providers. I think the issue of the Free State. So the Free State problem, a lot of them come from other things outside of infrastructure, but they are affecting infrastructure. So we've had management problems in the Free State. We've had failure by management to manage their budget properly, both in terms of the compensation budget as well as the goods and services. But of course, you know, cash is cash. If you end up spending too much money on one thing, there's less money for the other thing. And that's part of the reason why the department has the place under administration. Tell us that we were there last week to engage with provincial treasury. They have put together a turnaround strategy for the department. There's going to be another set of sessions at the end of June to monitor how that process is starting, because they're at the moment doing a diagnostic of the things that they need to fix. And for that whole process, the powers of the accounting officer have been taken away from the health department and they've been given to the provincial treasury in order to manage the budget properly, given the difficulties that we've noticed that we've seen. I think the last thing, there was a question around projects on hold, the 81 projects on hold. I know my colleagues from the National Department will talk more about that. But it is a major frustration in the system when, for whatever reason, you have either quality problems in terms of delivery, or you have the types of problems that we saw in Northwest, where there's a problem with the community on the ground, and people, you know, protest and the project is stopped. Now, each of these projects should have in them a community liaison officer, a CLO, that is appointed to go to community and, you know, address their concerns and be able to communicate them, with them and so forth. So obviously one would have to go and find out what happened there. But these are some of the reasons why a project comes to a center, because either it's not safe for the people or because what we have is not safe for the children to keep up, and so things come on hold. I do think, in fairness, that we've got 12,300 projects. That's an enormous number of projects. And so the fact that we've got 81 on hold means that we can target them quite specifically. It's not a majority of the projects or a huge minority of the projects. And so I think from our side, and having conducted, I think we finished the visits last week, having conducted the visits, we think that we can take these things aside and we can target them very specifically, because it's not a lot in the grand scheme of what we're actually running. We believe that it is there, it is a problem, but it is a small minority that can be managed if we put our minds in our minds to it. The fact that we've got 81 or 12,300 on hold, it's not the worst thing in the world. It's probably, it should be zero, but it's something that we can focus on. I think, Chairperson, I hope I haven't left anything out. If I have, you will guide me, but I will leave it at that for now. Thank you,
Mr. Shishi. We are on schedule 10 minutes past 11. Board members, be aware of our time issue. What is not here in the financial picture is the expenditure information at the provincial level. So, it's a vacuum, and this vacuum has to be filled. We need that. So the Treasury with the department, please can work on that and forward that information to both committees. The issue of desks. Is desks part of infrastructure? Leaving the question with you, we're going to listen to your presentation. I'll come back to this question after your presentation. That's the reason why I'm talking now of my own constituency. Number 20, is there a quick follow-up by you? Is that on the figures?
Yes.
Into the mic, please. Yeah.
And then the other issue is that I heard that there would be problems with regards to project implementers, the implementing agency. But for instance, if an implementing agent has got a problem, do you remove him or them immediately and appoint somebody else that is going to do the job? Because we can't entertain the delays. There are delays that are not explained. If there are delays, what do we do?
I noted the member here. And then Mr. Madeleine, then we go.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to, on the same table that I've previously lost on project status by time infrastructure, just understand a few more things. I do understand that you didn't necessarily have to give detail of the difficult schools. The fact is it's on your slide. It's on your slide, so you gave rise to the question. I think grade R shouldn't be lost. You didn't mention that. But I want to refer to the last row on that slide, or in that table. The total of projects was 12,299, as you mentioned now. Now, I presume that's a project from 2011, as you mentioned, and some EIG one that may have rolled into the period. The total number that have been finally completed is 1,839. I haven't worked out the percentage, but it's 10%. Before, 15%. Which is astoundingly low. Could you embroider on that? Perhaps the one in the forthcoming presentations that we're going to be having. But the numbers that number is very, very low. Won't you just give some flesh to it?
Honourable McLean, then as a member, yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I was listening to the presentation, and the presenter seems mum about the colleges. I don't know if they don't form part of the whole thing, but readers maybe. You correct me if maybe I just want to know something about that. My concern here is the issue of contractors who are seem to be doing jobs. And the department takes a very long time to pay them. You see, you might have read in one of the papers that the contractor lost his items such as wheelbarrows from those who are doing labor for not paying them for 3 months. So I just want to know if maybe they are putting some measures in it as far as monitoring is concerned when it comes to payment, because this has been a major concern for many years gone by. And also, I want to know from the department. I was perusing some of the documents there. I don't see anything which pertains to colleges. Most of these colleges is a major concern, cause for serious concern. They are being made, they turned into brothers. And I think you agree with me that these close colleges, which are of course in a sense of dilapidation, most of them have also lost shape. What is the department doing about that? Are they accruing something from the people who are using those rooms in order to do the renovations to the buildings? Or what exactly is happening with the colleges?
Are you referring to colleges?
Colleges, yes.
That's higher education.
Yeah.
We're
dealing with basic education.
We registered your question, no problem.
Okay.
But we will take it at another level.
Chief, thank you. Can I also just clarify, and I saw that we had a list of mobile schools, 202. Just some background on that, and I assume that is not the mobile classrooms that we've scattered
in
proper schools. Can we just
get clarity
on where are those? Thank you.
I think that's what it's easy to know.
Thank you very much, Chair. What I would like to know, we're speaking about these beautiful projects that are going up, but has money been put aside for maintenance? Because this is a huge, huge challenge. and I need to know if we have done it. Thank you.
So let me start with a question on the delays or failures by implementing agents, because I mean this is one of the big issues that we're constantly dealing with all the time. And that's frustration, major frustration for us. So you've got two things broadly. You've got the implementing agent, so you will have an implementing agent like, for instance, an IDT for Akuha. Or you'll have public works, in some cases, the provincial public works department. Then you will have a contractor, the person that actually builds with it, does the actual construction. If none of those two fail, you must know you've got problems. Because whether you're trying to get rid of an implementing agent or you're trying to get rid of a contractor, you will have a delay. Because the process of getting somebody off-site, getting a contract cancelled, finding somebody else, and before that somebody else can come on site, if the person that you've got rid of appeals, goes to court or whatever it is that they do, you are going to have a delay. It's just like that. And so the emphasis then, because of that problem, is how do you make sure that A, you get the best types of people that are unlikely to cause you problems, and how do you make sure that your plans and your design are credible so that you don't reach, you know, these kinds of difficulties with these things. It's important to understand that it will never be perfect. But we think that from where we were in 2010, 2011, where we had, as I said, 10% spending, and I mean the numbers were just horrible, we are starting to see some improvement in that area. But you will not be able to escape delay if you have to remove a contract off-site. It's not possible. It'll just happen. And so, this is part of the thing that we grapple with in some of these infrastructure projects. But we are confident that it's better now, but excellent. It's better now than it was before, and it will continue to improve. I mean, why do contractors fail? Do they fail because they're not qualified enough? They don't have enough experience? Do they fail because they don't get paid on time? Do they fail because some people are greedy for money and they bite off more than they can chew? The answer is all of the above. We've seen all of them. I visited a project in the Eastern Cape, in the KFD area, where somebody bid for a project, and because they were determined to get that particular project, they bid at such a low price, they got the contract, but they were not able to deliver. Not because they haven't built anything before, or because they don't have a track record building schools, but because they got greedy and they simply bid off more than they could chew. These are typical things that you end up dealing with. And the issue, as I said, the issue of non-payment is a big issue that must be addressed, and we are addressing it. At the moment, across the 9 provinces in the country, last year there was about 5 billion rand of unpaid invoices. Now that 5 billion, most of it was not in infrastructure. Most of it was goods and services and things of that nature. A smaller portion was in infrastructure. But it should be zero. It shouldn't be there. And where that problem doesn't get solved, I think we showed with municipalities will be prepared to take drastic action. On the low number of completion, let me just clarify two things. The first one is that in reality, when you talk about whether something is completed or not completed, you should add the column practical completion and final completion. Because the difference between the two is that final completion simply means that the certificate, the final account, so the paperwork, as it were, has been, the administrative process completed. But actually, when you say practical completion, you're also talking about completion, so you have to add those two numbers to it. But your point is still a good point, because, as I've said a number of times during the session, we have had problems with school infrastructure delivery. In other words, a lot of what we are delivering, completing now, is stuff that actually should have been delivered and completed quite a while ago. And that's a fact that I don't think anyone is running away from. We had problems, there were major failures in project management, and we had to step up to try and resolve them. We're seeing improvement now. We've gone from 10% spending to 100% spending. So that's the, but the reality is that the lag from those years is still part of what we have to deal with. And then finally, I think I will leave the mobile schools one to the activities about where they are and so on and so forth. By the way, in Eastern Cape, out of the 8 months on hold, I think 4 of them are in the Eastern Cape that are on hold.
To that declaration, Mr. Shishi, I'm going to hand over to our capable co-chair, Frank Gasmada. The maintenance.
Thank you very much. So on the maintenance, our primary focus at the moment is how do we, the money that's currently in the system, right, for building, for infrastructure, for capital, what we would like to do and what we are pushing to do in the, you know, both in the medium term and beyond, is that the ideal situation is that you don't want to take all of that money and put it back in the pot. It just disappears. You want to transition, right, that money into maintenance money. So if you've got this money that you're building something, and you build it and you finish it, you want to be able to take that money as it's, you know, the allocations, keeping them in place over a bit of time, and transition them towards operational requirements. That's the most ideal way of dealing with it. Now, currently, I think it's about 15%, 10-15% maintenance. The colleague, there's a percentage, it's about 10%. 10% of a capital cost is what you typically would require for maintenance. Which, well, at
ask our chair to take us forward. That's an important. There's two documents that we have to deal with. Over to you. Thank you.
Good morning, honorable members. Thank you, co-chair, for taking this so far. I would like to take this opportunity to thank National Treasury for the overview. Financial overview, and I hope that you are going to use it together with the presentation that you are going to get from the department to do our work for oversight and assess whether the value for money that we have expected from the allocated budget, we are really getting it. From the Department of Basic Education, I think we have to welcome the acting DDG and his team from the department. I would support that each member has got those two presentations that they are going to be dealing with, and it will be in their shoulders to tell us which ones are they going to start with. The two documents, the one, the education infrastructure gap document, and the ACD document. I hope all members will have copies. Before we head over to the department, I would like to add members of the Portfolio Committee of Basic Education, without any suggestions and so forth. I think we have dealt with most of the issues that are going to be presented in the past week, and it will be better for us to at least allow the select committee to take a lead in the question sessions and the engagement. But I'm not saying that you are repressed. If indeed there is something that you really want to raise, that you think that you can't go out of this room without even said it, you still get that opportunity. I would then take this moment to give over to the acting DG, Mr. Rotarayachi. Over to you, DG.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning to the Honorable Chairs, members of the Honorable Members of the Appropriations Committee, Portfolio Committee, and the Honorable Chair from the Select Committee on Education. So Chairperson, my name is Betty Pediatri. I'm a team DG. I'm accompanied by, on my right, is Mr. Mahoko, who is the Director of Physical Planning. He will commence with the presentation on the education infrastructure grant, and I think it will tie up to cover many of the questions that were asked on the presentation by National Treasury. Also with me is the program support unit for the backlog grant CD. Behind me is Ms. Deepoya, who is a civil engineer, who heads one portion of the program support unit. And on her right is Mr. Matunda, who's a quantity surveyor. On my left is Mr. Pila, who will comment on the finances of the CD program. Mr. Mada is in the DG's office, also accompanied by Mr. Mashanga, who is the Acting Chief Director of Communications. And we have Mr. Pananyeva on the Ministry, from the Office of the Minister. I'll hand over to Mr. Mapoko. We will cover the questions that are being asked, some in the presentation and others post.
Thank you, DG, and good morning, honorable members. The presentation from National Treasury covered quite a number of issues that are also on our presentation. So one wouldn't be spending much time repeating those issues that have been covered in the previous presentation with respect. The expenditure for the 2014-15 financial and the first line also indicate the very same issues that were raised in the previous presentation, and the table indicating the expenditure on the grant also mirrors the previous presentation. I'll just add a bit on some of the reasons which were alluded to in the previous presentation, but just to punch a bit on some of the issues that led to under expenditure in some of the provinces, specifically the Eastern Free State and the Northwest. As indicated, we had the challenge with Guha, which led to under expenditure, but the unrest, labor unrest in the Jeffries Bay, which subsequently was completed, the Sunshine and Jubilee Mass Primary School led to some significant even from outside in the DPP, even assisted in trying to intervene in some of the issues. The termination of contract that left contained and nephews was also alluded to in the previous presentation in the Eastern Cape. I think the reasons that we are providing for understanding the Eastern in the state were alluded to in the previous presentation. In the Northwest, there were disruptions in two major projects in Alabama, Flagstaff, and the one in Okazi in Brest. Also, there was community unrest in the Swaziland community, primary school, where we had members of the community insisting that they be appointed to the contract without meeting proper requirements. The Northwest Expo decided that all projects in the province would be done through the Department of Public Works, and the process in the last financial year of transferring all the projects to the Department of Public Works in the Northwest province led to some delays, because when they moved into the Department of Public Works, the Department of Public Works had took some time in getting traction, in getting those projects moving. Now, going into the actual project problems, as Mr. Fisher has alluded, we've got 12,299 projects. What I'm going to do is just to indicate the movement of projects, what we refer to as the project pipeline per problem. Just to indicate how the movement of projects from the last quarter of the previous financial, of the 2013-14 financial year to the last quarter of the 2014-15 financial year, how projects move from the different stages of the project life cycle, from project initiation up to to final completion, and also indicating projects that are on hold and those that were hesitated. But if you look at the Eastern Cape, for instance, about 11 projects were added into the system in the fourth quarter, but you've got quite a large number of projects that set for the whole year at identification and feasibility stage. I'm just going to explain in detail the first two or three slides and quickly move through the others with the hope that members will have got the hang of what I'm talking about. Now, in this instance, in terms of the Eastern Cape, you look at the number of projects that are at feasibility, at risk feasibility, throughout the fourth quarter, the four quarters here. Almost a similar number of projects there. That the indication there is that you will not have enough numbers of projects filtering down to design and to tender and ultimately to construction. In that instance, the province would have a problem when those projects that are in construction are finally completed. They would not have a significant number of projects that would flow into construction and there are several move expenditure. So this province, whilst it has not spent, it is unlikely to move out of that challenge. These are some of the things I'll allude to that later on in the presentation. These are some of the issues when we make business promises. We sit with their units to advise them on what is it that they need to do in order to improve on this kind of a situation. The same thing with the Free State. The Free State has this number of projects, if this reporting is correct, the number of projects, 758 has been sitting in design for quite some time. And you've got 38 projects that are sitting in construction for quite some time. Now, this slide is quite disconcerting because it indicates that there are no projects that went into completion. But you will look at the report that we get later on, I think towards the end of my presentation, it will show a different picture to what we have in the IRA because this information comes from the infrastructure report model. Then you've got housing. Housing, if you look at their pipeline, it shows that there is a movement of projects from initiation right up to completion. This is a very good pipeline of projects. There is movement from quarter to quarter that shows that projects are moving from one to the other. The KZN one, honorable members, we need to indicate here as well, maybe also to add to respond to the question that talked about the project on hold. Honorable members, please remember that the KZN department decided in the middle of the year to transfer about 500 million of the infrastructure budget from the equitable share to deal with the compensation of employees. That created quite a challenge because quite a number of projects were already in construction and those projects had to be put on hold such that when funding becomes available in the new financial year, those projects should be, those contracts should be paid. However, the pipeline of projects in Cleveland has got quite one of the largest number of projects, around 4,900 projects in their pipeline at the beginning of the financial year, which went down to 4,126. But if you look at the number of projects that were concluded in that financial year, despite that setback, they have about 600 projects, so just about 700 projects that were started in the financial year. Limpopo, as the colleague from Treasury indicated, the province came from a very low base in the previous two financial years, but it showed some significant improvement in the last financial year. And there are a number of projects that reached final completion, about 90 projects reached final completion. However, the projects that are designed need to move into tender so that they are handed over to contractors. In Mpumalanga, about 91 projects were completed in the financial year. And in the Northwest, about 75 projects were completed. The Northern Cape as well has closed out about 108 projects in the previous financial year. and the Western Cape about 57 projects were completed in the last financial year. And this slide, honourable members, talks about the HR capacitation. Over the years, and also the presentation from National Treasury alluded to that, over the years, we identified lack of capacity in provincial departments as one of the reasons that led to underperformance. And it is for this matter that National Treasury and then ourselves agreed that a portion of the grant should be allocated to provinces to assist them in appointing built environment specialists to manage the infrastructure program. To date, about 153 have been appointed in the 9 provinces. The majority of those, if you look at that table, are 20% and we have quite a large number of working sectors, which is what we are looking at, because working sectors are located in districts where projects do take place, and these working sectors that go and monitor those projects and provide us with reports, and if ever there are any issues that need to be attended to urgently, these are the people who would alert us to those kinds of issues as quickly as possible. So there is movement with regards to this. In this financial year, in last financial year, or rather in this financial year, 32.9 million have been allocated to this particular issue. For the past few years, we've been concentrating on ensuring that the provincial units are well capacitated, and now this project will be moving into ensuring that all the districts have got the requisite number of working inspectors to ensure that there is that monitoring is indicated. Also, just to quickly talk about monitoring of infrastructure, in the DBE itself, we've got the PSU, which assists the department in terms of monitoring projects. What the PSU is doing is to continuously track progress on projects, inspect work in progress in projects and in completed projects, as well as to evaluate the quality of work. Since we had the PSU as part of the DBE, we have seen initially the PSU was meant to work with the three units, but the PSU is now also working with the education infrastructure project to ensure that we do have monitoring there. Now, what is our approach to monitoring? Just to indicate, we do have 12,000 projects on our books, so obviously you cannot visit all those projects. So what is the criteria that we use to select projects that we would be monitoring? For instance, we look at projects that have been implemented over a long period. You find that there are projects that are in construction in excess of 12 to 18 months. We target those kind of projects. Projects that are in critical phases of construction, then we visit those projects so that workmanship could be monitored and evaluated. Projects that have significant cost variation, we target those kind of projects. And projects that have not showed progress on delivery. And projects with high monitoring value, of course, and special schools are our special target. Just to indicate the number of projects that the DBE visited in the last financial year, per province, about 70 projects out of the total were visited by the DBE, and the number of projects that we visited are indicated in that slide, and the monitoring value of the 70 projects that we visited. Now, this slide, we drilled down deeper into the slides that National Treasury provided. What we do, we disaggregate these numbers that are in the IRM into specifics. Now, if you look at this slide, what we are talking about is the number of new schools and replacement schools that were built in the last financial year. We had targeted to build preventive awareness, I mean, 53 new schools and 33 replacement schools. Now, the difference here is that a new school is where no school existed before. A total new school with a new team number. And a replacement school is a where a school does exist and we are providing it with new infrastructure. Okay? If you look at those numbers, you might have a question why 120 schools were built whilst we had targeted to build 96. The issue of projects that were delayed in the previous financial year has come to the picture again. That whilst we had targeted to build X number of schools, you find that some of the projects that have been delayed do come into the picture. There are some projects that we had intended to finish over a two-year period. You find that the contractor is much more efficient than we had anticipated, that the school gets completed quicker than anticipated. So that instance, you find that the number of projects that we have anticipated to complete in the financial year is different from what you are to deliver. But in some instances, you find, except in the case of the Northern Cape, for instance, just to preempt that question, you had Eastern Cape, West Northern Cape had targeted to build two new schools, but they did not finish any of those schools. This was as a result of delays on the ground, and those two schools were not completed. Going into the next large, that tries to disaggregate this even further in terms of the number of ordinary classrooms, Grade R classrooms, multi-purpose classrooms, and so on. You can see that through that list to indicate what number of ordinary classrooms were targeted and how many classrooms were ultimately delivered, the number of Grade R classrooms and how many were ultimately delivered, and so on. Going down, you can disaggregate that into take teaching spaces and administrative spaces, and in the next slide, we look at water, sanitation, energy spaces, sporting facilities, and down there you've got maintenance and upgrading of projects. The total number of 675 maintenance projects actually were completed in the last financial year. Remember, we just thought we should indicate, even if it was not in the bridge, just indicate what are the targets for the 2040 MTF in terms of new schools. The state has targeted to build 544 new schools, new and replacement schools, by the end of 2018-19 financial year, and these are the numbers that have been targeted to be built over that period. So in this financial year, we are targeting to build 105 new and replacement schools. Remember, all the numbers that I have been talking to here exclude ACIDI, only on the EIG. Okay? And this goes on to disaggregate this into the number of ordinary classrooms, greater classrooms, and so on, in terms of the Excel spreadsheet that I have been showing previously. The last slide, just to briefly talk about the provision of furniture. A question was asked about whether furniture is part of infrastructure. Indeed, furniture is part of infrastructure. What this slide talks to, okay, maybe what one needs to indicate is that if you look at the grant framework indicates that the furniture shall be provided to infrastructure. So what is happening is that if a new classroom is provided, is built, that classroom will have been provided to furniture, a part of the project. If a new school is built, that new school will have to be provided to furniture. This slide here talks about what happens to existing schools, because that is funding that comes from the equitable share portion, not of infrastructure, but from the equitable share portion from the province. And we are looking at that table just indicates the status with regards to the provision of furniture in the different provinces. The Eastern Cape, for instance, the latest figures is that there are 845 schools that use furniture and the DBE that is in the province is that. 2016, the free state schools had to finish up from their allocation. We've got Gauteng has allocated an amount of 24 million expenditure, and it goes down, and for instance, Mpumalanga has increased its allocation from about 55 million in the last financial year to 82 million in this financial year. The Northwest has reduced its allocation for expenditure to 85 million in the current financial year. And the Western Cape has allocated about 16.5 million for the provision of expenditure in the current financial year. So this is just to give a brief shot into what is the status with regard to the provision of expenditure in the province. Thank you, Chair, honorable member, for your response to the question.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Masuku. I would propose that we proceed with the next presentation so that we are able to deal with the question of time. Thank you.
The sale of furniture for new classrooms is part of EIG. For existing and upgrading, it comes from equitable share. Okay.
Member, please remember to record your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I'm going to cover the background and the overall SED progress, and then my colleagues will share the presentation regarding non-financial progress, which will provide detail as well as the financial progress. The school infrastructure backlogs grant is basically more popularly known as the SED program, Accelerated School Infrastructure Delivery Initiative. And the conditions of the grant were basically to look at schools that were entirely inappropriate, in the first instance being mud, but we have broadened that definition to include schools that are made of flunkies as well as zinc and so forth. And then the second part of the program is to look at basic services, water, sanitation, which schools never had. Now, the grant is basically the responsibility of the Department of Basic Education. It works together with provinces in the program in terms of identifying the schools or the projects in terms of basic services to implement so that we avoid duplication. And by doing this, the department itself is at risk to be it's being audited by the Auditor General, and therefore any issues arising from this program can lead to an opinion that will be adverse to the department. So it's something that we also focus on as well to ensure that we do not fall on the wrong side of that. So the program, we have a program support unit to support the program manager. And we also interact with the Provincial Public Works. DBE appoints the implementing agents, and the implementing agents appoint PSEs and contractors. But we are a different kind of client in that we need to know what is happening from the top of the chain to the bottom, and you have to have the authorization of the accounting officer to proceed on a project irrespective of a variation order or the contract amount. And I put it simply like this: at DBE, if we want to eat chicken, a chicken burger, we should not be told that there's only beef burgers, because we are the client. And the clients are consulted with the community in terms of what they require. So there's some things we find when it comes to construction that contractors and PSPs do include things into a contract that doesn't add any value but increases the cost of the project. This is basically just a diagram of the unit. There's the unit with the program support unit, and then you have a program implementing agent who then has a project manager and has to have the necessary professionals to manage that by then setting out contracts and things like that. This slide basically gives the detail of the scope of work, and as we said, it was to look at schools that were no longer fit for purpose, were unsafe materials like asbestos, there were schools that were part of, which had prepared corrugated sheets as such. And in terms of water supply, the school never had water. And we look at different types of, in respect of municipal connections, goals, as well as rainwater harvesting with tanks. In sanitation, it's waterborne sewage where possible, EnviroLose and VIP. In electrification, it cannot be put on the grid to ESCOM to consider solar. presently, when I get the next slide, this was our base in terms of the scope of work. For each of the four types, we had a baseline when we started off. Presently, we do get requests, including a court case in the Eastern Cape, for schools that believe they, in terms of the criteria, need to be on the list. We then do an assessment, and maybe in the next few months, a few weeks, there could be additions as those requests come through, but they need to meet the criteria in terms of what the DORA has set out. But we do look at bringing in the provincial department and the EIG to assist. Those are really licensing cases. So this slide set up the scope, and after the assessment, we had an actual date. In some instances, it went up, as I indicated, because there were representation. In others, through other efforts, through the provinces and so forth, the number that declined. So our tasks seem to be slightly less. This slide basically sets out the process that we follow, in that from what we got from our experts in infrastructure, that the project would take approximately 18 months. From project planning to practical completion. In some instances, the increased time we provide decanting before we commence, that one of the conditions we put, that schooling will not be disrupted. We will not knock down the school and leave children on an open field to continue with schooling. We would need to, even if that requires an additional cost. So schooling would continue, and obviously in some instances, by having the decanting, we've already removed the children from the mud school. So there are other factors like the size, and I think in reference to some of the contractors who have put, in particular at the beginning of the program, they underestimated the access to these schools where in some instances there weren't even roads to those schools, and also to provide capability to the site. So the planning, the implementation cycle, basically stage one is planning, about 6 weeks, then it's procurement, then design, and then you go to contractor procurement, work, then it's into the works itself, which could be up to 12 to 16 months. And then you have handover and close up. So we have a number of implementing agents to build the new schools, from the DBSA, IDT, KUKA, Eastern Cape Public Works, National Department of Public Works, the Free State Education, Western Cape. These slides are just going to show how these things differ over time from the good, bad, and the ugly. In the Eastern Cape, in batch one, as our one honorable member indicated, that they started off in 2011. The grant has been legislated as such somewhere around in July, August, in appropriation, so it's probably that was our explanation for the slow start in that year. So that took between 10 months to 26 months. But the entire, that is in terms of construction, but the entire process over took 3 months. And DBSA is basically entity of government in that regard. In the Western Cape, we have the Western Cape Education Department working with their public works. The process is taking approximately 24 months. In the Mpumalanga DBSA, we've had construction in a school within 8 months. And it's a good story in which contractors can help the community build a few houses at no cost. The entire process took about 21 months. In Eastern Cape, where we are largely mainly responsible, we have IDT and KUKA and Public Works, which were appointed all at the same time in May 2012. And you will see that IDT, 13 months of construction, 19 months over the entire process, KUKA, 14 months, and then the process took over 21 months. Public Works, in some instances, construction has not started. They were appointed, the National Public Works, construction has not started. They were appointed in October 2013. It's 1.5 months where we're trying to get out of stage one and two. In the Free State, IDT was appointed in 2012 and delivered the first school 2.5 years later. DBSA deals with their first school 2 years after appointment. In Free State, we are 2 years into ending the schools to them, but we're still at stage two. And I'll come to some of these things which sometimes I don't know how you would explain, because there are reasons why sometimes you don't move out of certain stages, especially when whoever is supposed to get the contract is not the person that other people would like. In the CD program, in terms of the budget, over the years, the dollar has been allocated, $700 million in the first year, and $2 million in 2012, that's $2 billion, sorry, and $2.4 billion in 2013-14. In 2014-15, it was $2.9 billion. This included the portion that was, which we transferred to the Western Cape, and this current financial year will be at $2.4. My colleague, Mr. Pillar, will elaborate on this. In terms of our targets, net 510, and that increased to 529. Presently, we are at 109 over the, from the inception of the program. We also have the air schools with, with low enrollment of 135. These are now in the process of going through rationalization and merger. Mr. Masunda will provide for the details in that regard. So these are spread 84 of the 109, 84 in Eastern Cape, 13 in Western Cape, 5 in Free State, 4 in Mpumalanga, 2 in Limpopo, and I think we just completed recently the one in the Northern Cape. The water, it's been 382 since inception, the majority in the Eastern Cape, 91 in Limpopo, and in Gauteng and Northern Cape, we were not involved in water projects. On sanitation is 372 in terms of the progress. Eastern Cape 154, Limpopo 73, KZN 73, Western Cape 90. And electrification 288 since its inception, Eastern Cape about 166. Now I'll hand over to Mr. Matsunda. We'll give further details by province.
Thank you, DG. Good afternoon, members. You will note that some of us are a little bit nervous at my experience of presenting in Parliament. So if I look shaky, please excuse me. I can't help myself. I'm going to report you on the progress in the Western Cape, Mpumalanga, and the Eastern Cape, and I'll start with the Western Cape. In terms of the schools that have been implemented in the Western Cape in appropriate structure, these are the ones where we are replacing schools that had, in the case of the Western Cape, it was not much things such as prefab and stuff like that. We have 25 schools, and we are going to be implementing 25 schools. Now that's the first table. The second table gives you progress in terms of movement of the project in terms of IDMS, which is a national treasury directive in terms of how we must report stages of the project. That's one. In that one, we had 14 schools that were given the Western Cape Development Education. Now, Western Cape Development Education is the one that is contracted to us as DBE, but they are using development partners here as including agents. But for purposes of our management, we are only contracted to development education. Of the 14 schools that we started with, 10 of the special commission. And then we have batch number 2, where we have started with 11 schools to make 25. 3 of those actually reached practical completion. Now you note that there are projects that are under execution. So if you add those two numbers, 10 and 17, you don't get to what you get, a little bit more than 14. What we try to do, some of the projects that we engage are quite competent in that they have multiplicity of contracts that are working there. For instance, there may be a contractor that works within the actual buildings themselves. We have a contractor that works on the demolition. And so what will happen is that once the facility itself is ready for occupation, can be used as school, the kids are allowed to move in. So we deem that project will complete for the term is self-explanatory. But there may be some work that we're still doing outside to finish up the jobs. That's why you see 18 and 30 projects having respectful conditions that I must just explain. Those are the images of some of the projects that we have done in the Western Cape. Obviously, we are very challenged at the moment with the weather and also with the strikes that are underway in the industry. But you can see the quality of work that is being produced in the province. Let me just go to Mpumalanga. In Mpumalanga, we only have about 5 schools that we're dealing with, and the implementation that we use there is the GBSA. Of those schools that we have in Mpumalanga, 4 of them have reached partial completion, and then 2 of them are still regarded as being in the stage of execution. Really, the second one in that school is actually been complete, finished. The only thing that I'm standing for each two the kids to move in is the furniture. That is the only thing that I'm standing, and that can be resolved any time now. So some of the images of the school that we did at Mpumalanga. And in fact, the email Lini, the one of the schools that we are just about to complete, or by the one that we need to put in charge. Then if you go to water sanitation in Mpumalanga, we started with the fire project, then we had 9 projects removed, and then 12 projects added, and we ended up with 40 projects at the end. Of those 40 projects that are under construction, that we need to fit for implementation, 32 have reached partial completion, and then 18 are part of those that are under implementation. Some of them, in fact, those 18 are complete, practically complete, but they will do work outside the toilets themselves. And I'm going to the Eastern Cape, and I think the Eastern Cape is probably the biggest elephant in terms of what we are dealing with. The bulk of our schools are being built in that province. The ones that I'm going to report on are those ones that we have actually given to implementing agents. 234 of the just under 500 schools have been given to implementing agents. And then we had projects that have been moved off the program. And we gave us at the end a total of 225 projects that are being implemented. And maybe I'll just like to comment batch by batch. The first batch of 49, the GBSA one, was complete. That's where we really learned a lot of our lessons. And part of the mistake that we made with that one was also to allow a very short construction period because of the pressure that we actually were put under. And so we had lots of challenges with that. Also, that program has the highest failure of contractors. And we had a number of contractors being terminated. A couple went belly up. About those that went very happy with the largest. And I think one of the members mentioned the fact that we were helped by the emerging smaller contractors there. We've learned a lesson from that experience. It's very valuable. Then TVN is busy with 50 currently, and then IDT did 12 in that batch, and then we've given IDT another batch of 36, CDC at 26. Public Works, this is the Public Works in the Eastern Cape, we've done 16, we're doing 16 for us, and the National Department of Public Works is doing 36. I think this is now the problem, this is how the 225 that have been allocated to remediations have moved in various stages. We've got 89 of them have reached their completion, 56 are still under construction. We have a big challenge with the IDT, because these projects were given to them, I think, around 2012. And the Department of Public Works, where projects are not moving. And this is a batch that we instructed them to actually use what is called alternative building technologies. And we have quite a number of challenges with projects. And I think maybe while I'm at this slide, I must also just explain to talk about the issue around, before I go to the water, around the small schools that Mr. Kadachi referred to, the 228 schools that are not implemented yet. We've just engaged with the province over the last, I would say, period of 2 years. We've given the province the chance to actually relook at the schools. Well, those schools are all small. The enrollment of less than 135. And in terms of the divine, of the guidelines that guide the development of public schools, schools of that size should not be building schools of that size. Now, what the department has done, they are involved in a major program of measures and rationalization, which is a program which is covered by the competency of the department. We have looked at those projects. In fact, when we looked at that whole thing, they've given us additional schools that they are looking at merging, which brings that total school to just under 400. but the dance contract that we would we probably are looking at is probably in the region of 101. Out of that 400 schools, we'll probably end up with about 101 schools. Some of those schools are going to have hostels. So that process is actually on the way, just about to be finalized. If you go to a district process like Kapenit, or you go to district like Fort Beaufort, we've got major challenges. In Kapenit, the challenges are with a lot of small farm schools. So in that district, for instance, we've got about 12 schools that will merge into one school with a hostel facility, where kids will be bounced in the beginning of the term and be passed home after the term. And if you go to a district like Fort Beaufort, we've got a different problem there. We've got the proliferation of many, many small schools, 40 learners, 50 learners, 80 learners, and those kind of things. And now the challenge that we have there, and these are schools within a 5 or 10 kilometer range. So they're very close to each other. We have a situation where we now have to merge the schools, and what's happening there is also that the challenge that we have is that some of the schools were built during the at the time, the brick and mortar schools, that we need to look at which ones of those are we going to close and to what use are we going to put those facilities. Then if you go to Butterworth, you have a different problem. In Butterworth, you'll find that you have schools that are all manned, but they all sit on copies all over the terrain of the Wild Coast. And you have to now look at merging those schools into schools of about 500 learners or 1,000 learners each. So that process is well underway. Where we have a situation that's slightly different is in the school, which is out in Elliot, where we have a school with learners in excess of 2,000, which we now have split to two schools, so that we're able to teach those kids an environment where they can learn but also can be managed. So that process of measures and rationalization is almost done. I would say it's 90%. We are finalizing with the province. Once the province has finalized that process, then we'll be able to then move on to appointing communications and implement those projects. That would bring our process almost to the original ACB list, almost to a closure. I'm not sure if I'm leaving anything out there. Then we have water projects in East India. They follow the same sort of trend. Instead of 588, we ended up implementing about 527. I'm not going to bore you with things. All of this is in the slide. What I think might be of importance here is the question of managing implementing agents. I think Buddha Trust is one of our implementing agents. They finished the first batch of our schools, which is 684 plus 66. Water sanitation. They are busy with our second batch of schools. We've had IDTs also assisting us in both water sanitation. CSIR has been assisting also us with both water sanitation. We've had a bit of a mishap with CSIR. They started misfiring from day one. And the misfiring, you could see there was a massive turnover of project managers. And every time, because what we did with the second batch of the schools, when we avoided the implementing agents, because we had learned in the first batch, we developed our contracts, read like something like, you must give us suitably qualified individuals to manage these jobs. Suitably qualified individuals means they are project managers, they are engineers, if you deal with water, they must be people that can competently review designs that are presented to them. And also what we also did, what to say, if you are managing in a proper school, which is a big one, for every 10 schools, you must give us a project manager with the support, finance, HR, all of those other things. And then if you want to send in a smaller project, for every 25 project, you must give us somebody with a project manager who's going to manage those things. Now, we see that they started misfiring from day one. Up to a point where they actually came back and said, look, in all fairness, we really can't do this. We asked the department to agree to part ways. So we parted ways with them last year, December. We are in the process of now finalizing that mopping up process. So the department is now managing those projects directly with the CFIR. We had similar challenges, not to the same extent with the IDT, because these projects that IDT second version gave the water sanitation also very, very, very behind. Second, there the issue that I'm challenging them are issues around their own maturity. You know, when you're dealing with these questions, you're all of a sudden dealing with 80 projects of about 800,000, 700,000, million rand, and that sort of stuff. But still require the same intensity in terms of making sure that your documentation is right, because obviously, as a department, we set out a proper monitoring mechanism of the procurement, because the procurement is going to affect us. So sometimes you come through to us and we can't prove the procurement, but we found that the things that are lacking in the procurement require documentation, and there's a lot of tooling and showing between us and them. To the extent that there's some changes we were thinking of pulling out, but if they are wanting to stay the course, and assist us to finish the project. So those are the challenges. I think already alluded to the fact that the implementing agents are managed very tightly. And tightly means that for every drawing that they produce, especially at the high level when they are reciting long plans for submission of neutrality, we have to look at those drawings. Because those drawings will actually determine the cost that we're going to pay at the end of the day. So we manage that project very tightly. I think I'm not going to bore you with all the All I can say is that the problem, one of the biggest challenges, I think the members have raised the issue around how do we get around procurement issues. I think it's a great degree of difficulty. Because sometimes you find that the organization would say, because we insisted the CBE to actually form part of their procurement, so from evaluation, education, and awards, our officials must come part of that. And an oversight to make sure that the procurement there things are done appropriately. And sometimes to hold it challenging, because obviously we want to make sure that whatever happens there does not impact in our audit outcome. Can I hand over to my colleague chair with the question?
Thank you very my colleague did not respond. Starting with the Free State. Free State, there are three implementing agents, that's the IDT, DBSA, and the Free State Department of Education, responsible for the inappropriate sanctions. Of the 30 projects that were to be implemented, we have got only 17 that are being implemented. IDT were appointed to implement 10 projects, but at the moment they are only left 6 projects to implement, because 4 projects were handed over back to Department of Basic Education. They terminated the 3 projects because of poor performance, and 1 project, it took them very long to appoint a contractor, and the department with the IDT ended up having to take over those 4 projects. DBSA were appointed to implement 11 projects, and 10 of them are in execution. 1 project, the Media Mate, is still in planning because of the EIA process that they had to follow, the Environmental Impact Assessment Program. The Free State Department of Education were appointed to implement 10 projects, but so far they have not yet started with the 10 projects because of some procurement issues internally, and they are still discussing with the department regarding those. In terms of water, sanitation, and electricity, the Free State Department of Education were meant to implement 37. 35 of them are being implemented because there were 8 projects that were cancelled due to school closures, and 6 projects were added to replace the ones that were cancelled, so they ended up with 35. Sanitation, they were meant to implement 36.
11 projects were cancelled due to school closure. 3 were added to the ended up with 28. Electricity, there were 64, but because of two closures and the like, we ended up with 70 were added to replace the school closure, and 63 are being implemented. Of those projects that are being implemented, free trade education, water, 29 are still in implementation. Of those 29, 6 have reached practical completion. Sanitation, because of procurement issues, no project has been completed yet. The same with electricity, only 9 projects have reached PD. These are some of the pictures on the tools that were implemented in the city that spread effort. It has since reached practical completion. The orange it was the 100th active school, and it was officially opened when? In May, yeah. Moving on to KZN. KZN has got 3 schools. They are being implemented by adopted schools. And the 3 projects are still in construction. Construction is going fairly slow here. Adopted school is using a very different approach from all the other implementing agents. They are using community members to build the schools. So progress is moving fairly slowly. In terms of water and sanitation, there are 4 implementing agents in KZN, Mshajuse Water, CDC, and the IDT, and the, IDT. Mshajuse Water, they've got 79 water projects, 71 of them are being implemented. Sanitation, there are 10, only 7 are being implemented. CDC, they had 70, but only 64 projects are being implemented. So once again, it's because of the school closures or cancels that are schools that are the projects that are being cancelled because of various reasons. In terms of progress, Mshajuse Water, out of the 71 projects that were implemented, 55 have reached practical completion. Out of the 7 sanitation, all 7 have reached practical completion. Previously, of the 64, 46 have reached practical completion. Sanitation, only 7 have reached practical completion. The rest are still at the various project stages. IDT, out of the 73, 63 have reached practical completion. Sanitation, 23. Moving on to Northwest. Northwest has got 2 schools that are under construction, and both schools are fairly, they've moved quite a lot. They are close to PC, probably 90% or so, both of the schools. And in terms of water and sanitation, we have got the Department of, Provincial Department of Education as the implementing agent, but they have in turn subcontracted IDT as their implementing agent for batch 1. And for batch 2, the provincial department of education were the implementing agent themselves. They did not subcontract that. Out of the for batch 1, they were meant to implement 28 projects, but 13 projects were cancelled due to sufficient infrastructure being provided through other programs in those schools, so they are left with 15. Of the 15 projects that were implemented, and this is now by the IDT and the sub-implementing agents of the Provincial Department of Education, 12 projects have reached practical completion. 2 of those schools were on hold because of the rationalization. The 2 schools, the site were never handed over to the contractors, because when the contractors were just about to start, that's when we learned that the 2 are going to be closed. So they have not yet moved on that one. 1 project is still in execution. For batch two, there were 19 projects to be implemented by the Provincial Department of Education. But because of internal
procurement issues within the provincial Department of Education, the department decided that they will hand back the project or surrender the project back to DBE. So there has not been any movement on that. The Department of Basic Education is busy finalizing procurement of the professional service providers for the 19 projects. Moving on to Northern Cape. Northern Cape, there's only one school that was implemented. The school has been completed. It reached a final completion in March. In terms of water and sanitation, the provincial Department of Education is the implementing agent, but they in turn have contracted IDT and the provincial Department of Public Works to assist them in some of the projects. Out of the water projects, they were meant to implement 5 projects. Only one project is being implemented. The other 4 projects were cancelled. Sanitation, out of the 21 that they were meant to implement, 2 were cancelled due to insufficient infrastructure being provided to those schools. 2 were cancelled due to rationalization, so they were left with 19 projects to implement. Of the 19, 16 are still in execution and 3 have reached practical completion. Even the water, the one project that was being implemented is reached practical completion. Moving on to housing. Housing, there were no inappropriate structures, as we call them, but we only had water, sanitation, and electricity. There were 2 projects for electricity, and the 2 electrification has been completed. There were 10 projects that were added as part of the scope for the water project. And sanitation, batch 1, there were 7 projects that were to be implemented. 7 of them, the schools that were identified, they were cancelled because there has been sufficient infrastructure provided to those schools from other programs. But the provincial department identified different schools still for sanitation. So there are 7 sanitation projects that are being implemented. Batch 2, there were 14, all 14 of them were removed, but then another 7 were added. So of those that were being implemented, electricity has been completed. We have the certificate of compliance. Water projects, none of water projects have started. Once again, because the provincial Department of Education were using the Rainwater Foundation as their sub implementing agents, if you can call them that, but then there were contractual issues or procurement issues that the province and the DBE were not happy with. The procurement processes that were being used by Rainwater Foundation, so the provincial department cancelled the contract between the firm and the Rainwater Foundation. So once again, those projects were handed back to DBE. DBE is assisting in finalizing the procurement for those projects. Moving on to Limpopo. Limpopo, there are 3 schools that are being built. DBSA is the implementing agent. 2 schools have reached practical completion. Sidi Bay and Molefo, they have reached practical completion. 1 school, Honoko, they are almost there, probably 90% or so. And in terms of water and sanitation, the Mbula Trust is the implementing agent. In batch 1, they had 38 projects to implement and 83 sanitation, sorry, batch 1 is 38 water projects, batch 2, 83. Of the 83 projects, 13 of them were found to have sufficient infrastructure from other programs. 6 projects were cancelled due to rationalization, so they were only implementing 64. Sanitation, batch 1, 40 projects were added as part of the new scope. Batch 2, 37 projects. Of those 37, 2 projects were cancelled due to rationalization, and they were only implementing 35 projects. In terms of progress of the 38 projects that were implemented in batch 1, all 38 projects have been completed and they've reached CC. Of the 64 of batch 2, 11 are still in execution, 53 have reached practical completion. Sanitation, batch 1, all 40 have reached practical completion. Batch 2, of the 35, 3 are still in execution, 33 have reached practical completion. But here in Limpopo, as much as progress has been good, one of the difficulties that we have experienced is for projects to now reach final completion, where all the necessary documentation, final accounts are being submitted. We are still struggling a bit on that one to get all the paperwork so that we can now say this project are 100% done. I will hand over to my colleagues to talk about the funding.
Good day, honorable members. If we hear any sounds like doofus, we should know that it's my heart pounding. But I'm quite afraid to present, but however, I'm also honored and it's a privilege to address leaders in education. we are going to give our financial report on our city. But I'm not going to dwell too much on it because we have realized earlier on the National Treasurer has spent quite a lot of time explaining the pattern of expenditure in the report. So obviously there are issues that one would like to concentrate on. However, on the slide that we have before us here, it does explain that we have it from inception, which is actually we have done it per province. We realize from the table here that most of mine is spent in Eastern Cape simply because the majority of the projects are in Eastern Cape. So obviously it's going to be in line with the expenditures from inception to date, including Cape Town, Western Cape, is 5 billion that are already spent. Yeah, honorable members, I would like to spend a little bit more of time talking about the slides, maybe in relation to dollar expenditure and our projection. So from the slide here, we are able to see that the initial the graph that was shown by our colleague, Mr. Shishin, it was clear that the expenditure we've been understanding from for the past 3 years. Understanding, it means that we're also losing some money to National Treasury, because in all occasions we have tried to ask for our rollovers and then we are not successful, even though the reason that we alluded to earlier, it seems from our side that there's always been good reasons why we are underspending, because we realize that the infrastructure expertise doesn't necessarily reside in education. So the area part of the year were mainly due to planning and then trying to get the system going. But however, I need to assure everyone present now that we are on our peak, we are at the highest level of activity. Everyone understands the system that has weakened. However, we may be having obviously snag there and there. So currently we have managed to spend 100% of the money that was allocated to us. However, even though we have spent 100% of the money that was allocated to us, it is clear that on the next slide we'll see that we say we've got a shortfall, which is mainly made of the result of the outcomes that we have had. Like currently, the latest figures that we are reporting for accrual is about 415 million. On this slide, we are showing it as 415. Obviously, we all remember that the accruals are expenditure but not paid by the not yet paid by the department at the end of the year. So it is clear that that 408 or 15 that I'm talking about is going to eat into our current allocation, because even though expenditure was engaged last year, we can only pay the companies from the allocation that we're actually getting this year. So, which means the allocation that we're having this year, we've allocated 2.4 billion currently, with around 180 million of that money going towards Western Cape. So, which gives us in some sort of like of a problem, because if we give Western Cape 380 million on the 2.4, we are remaining with 2.1 billion, which is on this next slide. Yeah? So we are remaining with 2.1 billion, and our projections for the current year, the commitments that we have, and what Mr. Matunda has actually earlier on indicated, we're anticipating that the department needs at least another 1.5 billion for it to be able to commit, for it to be able to perform its affected in terms of finances. The other thing that I would like to speak to is the question that was raised here on by the honorable member about DBSA for non-payment of contractors. I must show you, honorable member, that the DBSA runs two payment cycles in a month. So from where we're sitting, DBSA is one of the best performing IAs for us. Yes, indeed, there may be some contractors that are not paid. It couldn't be because the IA do not have money. There are different reasons why a contractor would be delaying payment. Sometimes it's because people don't show the work, and then I think we've been strict in telling the IAs that in the event where we send our DSU and then we are not able to the work, and we realize that they forsake the job and pay the contractor, will be deducting the money from the management fee. So yes, those could be the delays. But I guess when the contractors phone, they also phone us directly. They don't mention the problem in price. They just tell us that they're being owed money. And the other thing is that we can only pay a contractor if a PSP, a professional service provider, has approved the certificate. So if a person issues an invoice which is not in agreement with the certificate in the case, the department is not going to pay that. So those are some of the things. However, in Eastern Cape, what we've also going to do, we have asked all IAs, Mbula in particular, that all small contractors need to be paid. So I think we are on the point of contact. Yeah. Thank you, Member Bajay.
Thank you very much, GDE, for the presentation. Members, since we have waited and waited for the presentation, presenter after presenter, you know, I thought that you all had your questions noted down, and then that moment has arrived for you to raise those questions. I'll start with Honorable Van der Waal. Honorable member from the NCOT Select Committee in Direction. I'm sorry, I don't know your name. Honorable Jelen. And then the honorable gentleman sitting next to you is also noted, Honorable Gosho, Honorable Gaila, and Honorable Lasmore in the order, please. And I have also noted Honorable Kwanza from the and Honorable Mbuli. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Next one, you are noted.
Thanks a lot, ma'am. Of all these figures that we seem to be playing around, I want to know how much has gone to the president's pocket. I'm just pulling your leg on that one. Thank you. No, I just want to know, as much as I understand that the FUHAS, the IDT, DBSA, and the MBLAHAS are the implementing agencies, I'm interested in knowing how much. I would have wanted to understand the deeper relationship between, you know, departments and these implementing agencies. And also, as to how much goes to consultants and these agencies. I don't know if maybe you've got a percentage to limit to say this is a particular figure that has to go to these implementing agencies. Because when I look at it, It seems to me individual companies on the losing side. Because as much as I understand that, you know, these implementing agencies are monitored and maybe managed by, you know, their boss. So it shows to me individual companies are no longer being considered for this way. So I just want to know the deeper relationship between the departments. And maybe if you could at least try and be specific as to how much goes to what. Thank you.
I will just, before you speak, the order that I have recognized was sent to the Honorable Vanderbilt, so I will revert to that order. Thereafter, you will come to the front of it. No, I know Honorable Vanderbilt very well.
Okay, thank you. I mean, there's a list of questions, but I just want my first question asked, and that was the one that was standing over on the 202 mobile schools versus mobile classrooms. If I can have that answered, you know, coming next.
Can you proceed?
Thank you, Sister. These are very important entities, and one has to compliment you. Now, maybe you won't understand why I'm complimenting you. First of all, it is not your money to pay school, technical and other, and as a department. It is public service money to pay school to do technical. So that's why I'm going to say that because I think it's done here. Because it's doing another department work. And I think in future chapters, public works must also be here. There are entities within government that are given money by this government here. One of them is CIED. It should be helping you to monitor. You're getting money from the government. There's also another entity that deals with contractors. It's getting money from the government. They all have people saying things like that. I'm talking about. And if those entities were doing their work, wouldn't have been having these problems that you are having. Now, I'm not making a mistake. There are public things. But I'll speak to you after the meeting. I know some of you can do very hard working administrators. There are some things. But another thing for me is the non-finalization of final accounts. It's very important, especially for the emerging sectors. It is something that you need to address. I'm just asking you need to address this because the emerging sectors depend on that final account. So it's very important that you address that problem of the final account. It might not be you. It might be your implementing agents. Mr. Matunda, you know, remember this way. There's a gap between your accountability. You've got your implementing agents, then you've got your consultants and contractors. If anything goes wrong with the contractor, by some of the consulting agents, I think this is a good part of the The consultants also need to be punished if they are to be blamed for the late delivery. So it's something that you cannot say that public worker to address. It's very important. Some of the time, the consultants are delaying the project. And there's only one party that's going to be punished. There's not much you can do about that. Then, also, the VO, I think you need to address the issue of the VOs, because there are some VOs that sometimes agree on site, and they do not come to you. You just need to look into that. It's, you just need to close the door with that. Then, you talked about, Mr. Matunda, about alternative methods that are not being completed from 2012. And I agree with you as well. You know, sometimes we agree to anything. When we did present the alternative methods, I was in charge of the committee. He said this lasts a lifetime. And believe me, you, there's nothing that lasts a lifetime. And now it's coming to burn out. You can agree with me. They are cheaper, but they're not, they're not much on labor. So, again, that you know, really you need public works to be accessible so to get that you can get to where the real problems are. Because the real problems don't lie with them.
belongs to public works. Infrastructure belongs to public works. And that's not the mandate of the...
Let's be mindful of time, honorable member, because you've already raised about 5 questions and we are short of time. So
okay, no, thank you to everybody. You can ask how many questions. I have come to say I can raise 50.
Thank you, Chair. Did I hear correctly that the equitable share is used for the purchasing of furniture? If this is the case, I can understand why there's so much overcrowding in classrooms, because equitable share is then also used for wages, so they're not enough to buy furniture, and this is a challenge that we all have to look at. And then another thing, during oversight, you get to schools that have been closed down and you stare into the old classrooms and there are heaps and heaps of desks and chairs lying around. Those pieces of furniture can be used in our new schools. And then what I'd like to know is, if you go to page 13, the Mpumalanga water and sanitation, what does it mean, number of projects cancelled due to closure? I've seen that with the other provinces as well. That's just a clarity question. Thank you very much. With regard to Mpumalanga, I see there are no inappropriate structures. Is that true or not? Because it's not contained in the presentation. Thank you.
Honourable Chairperson. Hey, thank you very much, Chairperson. In the main, mine are not questions to say, but I just very much say something. We would like to welcome the presentation. It has informed a lot of clarity on a number of issues that we've had questions on, and the previous chapter said we've got time constraints, so I will not be able to ask some of the questions, but I just want to say that with regard to costing of the project, sometimes get invited to the official headovers or official openings of the structures, the schools or whatever. And when you reach there, even though they're religious, you are not a qualified person to say this project is worth 35 million rupees. But it was that kind of suspicion to say that this cannot be 50 million. Probably it will be in the region of about 85 million, the way I look at it. In other words, what I'm trying to ask you, who is protecting the department in terms of ensuring that the costing of the project does not exploit the government, giving the users financial responsibility, and then we have the government. Secondly, we shall have to take very tough decisions on some of these issues. I still do not have answers that those people that are not doing or are not contributing towards expediting the processes must be left, because it's difficult to remove them once they are engaged. Much as there are issues that would delay the processes, but once we step our authority and the government is to say, if it doesn't perform, it will delay us, we are going to start for that period. When we implement things. But afterwards, people will know that if you don't perform, you're taken out. Rather than to keep people that don't want to perform simply because of our president, they are going to support penalties. I don't think it's going to have assist us in any way going forward. We need to stamp our authority in some of the instances, and then processes will correct themselves as we go along. And then the issue also of the rationalization of schools. Delays definitely because there was not sufficient consultation to cause communities to agree. That we agree that this is how we would measure and this is how we are going to take the process going forward. Proper consultation needs to be done when we propose to merge the institution in order to facilitate. And also the acquisition of land, of course, all those stakeholders need to be properly consulted, even before the start of the project, before we experience delays as a result of controversy, then we have been affected to our But I was happy to hear that you were at the peak of your performance. and you say that you've actually exhausted the status of a priest. You have lost, you are going to exhaust. And you are even asking for more, about 1.5 billion more, in order to be able to do your, to reach your target. Is that what you said? Maybe I was asking.
Chairperson, I'm going to instruct you. Even can we take the next person? Honorable Boone,
Chairperson, thanks for the chance. I'm going to talk about this.
Can we go to Honorable Lapmo?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I know we're running out of time, but I'm going to ask some questions because I don't want to lose the opportunity. The listener forecast said that he would take a turn. He did try. I know. I don't know if I'm having a slow day. I really don't. But I do not understand your table. I'm looking at the Eastern Cape project pipeline. It says, let me just give you one example. It says 2013-14 quarter four. Pre-feasibility 760. I believe 260 projects were pre-feasibility stage and in quarter four. 2013-14. Then you go quarter 1, 2014-15. Is it 660 new projects or is it 660 still carried over from quarter four? And as you go along, you get to just carry along that same road, feasibility, you get to 653. It's not 653 new projects, it's 653. You've now lost seven, have gone to feasibility, I presume, or dropped off the radar completely. Can you just explain? I cannot understand the table. Another thing about the table is project initiation is zero. Does that mean that no new projects have been initiated in this last year? Well, it must mean that. And why? Chair, the two provinces particularly, I think, are struggling with respect to enough schools, and that's Western Cape and Gauteng. Gauteng been in the news substantially over the past few months, in fact, with kids and the parents camping outside. Camping outside schools. There are not enough schools in Gauteng, it appears. And to be building nine more is not going to solve the problem. Now, I understand that during this next financial year, or the next period, I understand that it's not the problem of the Department of Basic Education, it's a provincial problem. But somebody has got to say, this is not enough. You need to be building more, and I would think that that would be the Department of Basic Education, in fact. How involved is the Department of Basic Education in that? And then, Chair, just with respect to, you mentioned a lot of times, so I won't mention to a specific slide, but with respect to during the last financial year, and it was a very good presentation, both the new presenters were excellent, the 100% expenditure is only laudable if it equates to 100% delivery, and it doesn't. And in fact, in not one of these presentations that we have, we've got three presentations in front of us, not one of them actually says, this is how much we targeted, this is how much we delivered, therefore we delivered 50%. Not one of them does that. So nowhere does it actually say, well, we spent 100% of the money, but we actually only delivered 50%. What did we deliver? Thank you, Jim.
Honorable
Basson,
you are the last.
For me, the presentation as well as the Malaysian presenter, they did well, I agree, they did well. Their presentation is clear. On top of this one honorable who said public works, yes, PID should also be part of such presentation. I think they provinces, MECs and premier should also be called in because a lot in this under expenditure and the money that is being sent there to press is affecting the people on the ground, of which they are the people to give clarity to such a committee. I suggest that next time they should be part of presentation and just get clarity from the committee. why as Western kids are given more money than other provinces and more special for their respective provinces.
Thank you, members, for the questions. I apologize for restricting you, but I think that we can always find another time when we are not under pressure. I would therefore give to the department to respond to the issues that have been raised by members. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. And to save time for my focus, take the two questions of Honorable Panabat and Honorable Abimo. But I would like to indicate that we would take any open questions that the members may have had, which to the secretary can be sent to us, and we will gladly provide you with information in that regard because of time. But quickly to run through some of most of the questions. Basically, the issue about relationship with the IA and the department. One of the things you find with public services are public servants. They become friends of service providers. And when they do that, then we don't get to look at it. For us, the IE, the service provider, was contracted to do certain things, the same with the PSP, the same with the contractor. They need to meet the obligations of a contract. And I'll cite a quick example. We entered into a contract with IDP on a particular management fee. And usually our management fee has to be below 5%. We don't follow the industry check. Treasury then issued a practice note that IDT must be self-sufficient and therefore you must charge 7 or 8%. And then they issued us an instruction that we must pay. We said, we refuse to do that. We're in the middle of a contract. If you're building your house, you cannot be told now I must pay 3% more. Either you do our work or you go. And we had a long battle and legally we were right. The same now with the Department of Public Works who wants you to do work at 2%, then give the same work to IDT. We cannot pay what they want. We contracted you for 2%, you take it, you undercut yourself, just go belly up. Which is what has happened to contractors as well. The only issue on terminations is that you need to analyze the entire situation. In that, we get legal advice, we look at it, sometimes you're at almost roof level, if you terminate, there could be implications, so you need to look at the cost in that regard. So, there's an interesting phenomenon that comes up as well when we are terminated. Sometimes the replacement contractor is cheaper than original. The thing that we have lost is time. It's quite interesting. Sometimes they're out because you brought in somebody and it's not really their work as such. So it's a matter of analyzing and in order to try to spread the work as well, we put out a framework agreement for at the three levels, the IA, the contractors, so that we try to bring on board everyone else. But on the other hand, we're not in a training program where people take our money and don't build our school. In this program, you will not find the money spent in most schools. And what you have here is that we are here to ensure that the child has a school. If we're not doing that, then we should give it to someone else to do the building. I think the other one was about, was raised regarding our relationship with, DB in his previous life with DOE never built any school. He monitored infrastructure, but he didn't really do anything except with the European Union assistance. But as the department has split, the minister and together the Minister of Finance have come into this. If those who are required to do the work, we would actually stick to what is actually our business. But we built up over time a team that has expertise, and I think to come to the other question regarding the additional schools, the issue of demographics and migration, also something looking at, because as DBE we're responsible for what is the sector plan, the school infrastructure sector plan, which will then direct provinces in that regard. While it may be the responsibility of the province to do the building, we need to offer, we have that role, and that's what the team has also worked on. Mm-hmm. We've actually done work going up to 2030 and even beyond as to what we're expecting about 2 more million children by 2030. I'm not sure, I don't know the exact figure, but that translates into a certain number of classrooms, certain number of teachers, certain number of techniques and so forth to the education of the system. But that's the kind of planning we're looking at. On the late payments, what we face, and to answer the question that the Honorable chairperson of the Civic Committee for Education has indicated, is that what we have done is, if I told in a meeting that if I overspend, I'll be charged. So I said, go ahead, from some of the national treasury. Is that we've actually spent 400 million above what our budget was. But our accountants managed that by not processing. But that is equated with evidence on the ground where the buildings were completed. And you could not tell them to stop. If you tell them to stop, then we will repeat what provinces do. A project gets abandoned. In order to restart, you end up paying more. And our major clients were the DBSA, because what we do is we make advances, and when you leave 70% and you've given us invoices, we then give another advance. By the last quarter of the financial year, we had ended up where we could not make advances. Wherever we could get a 50 million or 100 million, we made a transfer to DBSA. I called DBSA in to indicate that we have this situation, but we are good for money because we are government. The other is DBSA also on their own had another account where they continue to pay people, but for the Auditor General and account purposes, we didn't want that to be seen as a loan. So the minute I think we ended up in the new financial year, we then released the money that we could have given. So that's why it could have been instances of what is referred to as late payments. But that wasn't because we did not want to pay them, and I think we do follow up with anybody that indicates that they will be and agree. I think in the past we reported to the SCOA as well that we probably got the best record in terms of paying in terms of the industry in construction and such. As long as the work is done, there's paperwork that can be backed up and it can be audited by the EG. If it's not, we will not, whoever does it probably doesn't have to come to work the next day. So the same comes down to the variation orders. Those words don't exist in my vocabulary. These colleagues know that they had to come and explain each of the POs when it did happen. And there are sometimes a season of POs, and this is what previously, well, in other projects, basically rise the cost. It doesn't necessarily mean that you give a PO, you get what you want. So we look at those, and I won't mention it, but we do have a percentage based on treasury guidelines that you can only do a PO, so you've got to follow that with your CFO advice as well. The other thing is that when you start out a project, the PSU does an assessment and works out what is the estimated cost. This is given to the IAs and the PSPs. They can go out and get that. When they come back and give us an amount, there's a certain percentage you cannot be above. Even when they are above within that percentage, you need to give a detailed explanation why are you more. And the final test is when you go out to tender and contract account. What we found is that in most instances, people are within our amount. When they are over, we have to look at what is that, and that's when the to and throwing goes on that delays the project from moving. And if you don't follow that process, then you're being reckless with the money that is not ours. It's a public at the end of the day. Now, on the alternative technology, we report to the PICC, well, on the entire program. And the president, the PICC reports to the president, and the premiers when they do meet. And basically, they've set out that you look at this alternative technology. The honorable member is correct that there are certain technologies that have not helped us in the past, but we basically, in certain instances, basically the wish of the community what it would be like. So some don't like the alternative technology, but they're not necessarily cheaper. They're almost equal to construction amounts that we have of brick and mortar. You may save some time, but also there are very few people that can supply on the volumes we'd like. So we look at about 6 that we believe that can assist us. On furniture, Mr. Mafoko has reported that we're in a good situation that the DBE is in the furniture business. We work with the Department of Labor and the Department of Environmental Affairs, and we have supplied furniture on, you know, an emergency basis. You cannot be in a school where you put a school and then people say it's a provincial responsibility to get the furniture. So that's what is done, what Mr. Mapoglu referred to, that each contract must include the furniture. You're building a toilet, you're providing water, and you get to a school and you find children to minister as many stories to tell where children remain standing. You cannot provide them with a toilet seat and then tell them they must wait for guests. So that's why we even have, even now, you tell me you need 500 guests for 50. We've got emergency supply to drive you somewhere. As long as we go and verify and check that they know desk and check and the exact number, we can get them in a very short space of time. So that is one of the things, the basic educational tool that we need to provide. The children cannot put on, bricks and stumps and such. In Mpumalanga, there are 5 schools in Mpumalanga, 4, which are appropriate. Basically, our definition is that when we refer to inappropriate structures in the entire school, there could be a school that will have one room that is shut as such, so they are inappropriate structures, but you can take this outside into detail to other structures like that. On costing, we've had issues that I think now National Treasury is helping departments, well, not only the department, but other infrastructure projects to look at what costs are to achieve procurement officers. Unit, and just like an example, we have adopted schools follow the different models. It's an adopted school foundation. In that adopted school is basically not a true construction implementing agent. In that when we did those 3 schools, the adopted school came in under 50 million. And when the assessments were done by the team, and we went out to the market, we would have paid close to 90 million. And in fact, if you go and read the annual report of the department and its financials, you'll find there's a finding against us. In that the doctor's school is not CIPT rated, and therefore we outside, or we say we take the funding. So that the 30 million we say, and the doctor's school is working with the community, maybe it's slightly longer, but there's other benefits to the community itself that they will probably get in terms of educational programs. So we are looking at costing. Mapoko will come in. And just to respond to the Western Cape point, I like the West Blue. Most often. And that's why people may think that I've been told that I gave money to the Western Cape by one other problem, HOT. But it's not because I wear blue all the time.
I want to make a proposal to you because never still have to go and eat. And I would suppose that the time is going to be very short for them to eat and rush back to the plenary. Since what you have already proposed, that questions that were not answered, they can be responded to in writing, or even if you suspect that your question is likely not to be answered, you can still write it afresh and send it there to the department, and they will have to respond to it as usual, so that you are able to save time. I'm not trying to pressurize you. I know that you have taken all the effort to come in on this important meeting and session. I would request my co-chair to talk to us.
Thank you very much, Chair, although I can't call on the last session. I think the point that is raised by Honorable Finji Ngoto is that we will have to deal with some of the issues differently. There's a sitting discussion on, so we are very quiet. But I think we want to thank the department for sharing this information on conditional grants expenditure, much more detailed, and very soon Parliament will be going this oversight meeting, and then we'll decide how we use this information at our disposal to go to such schools that you may want to visit, or whichever provinces that you decide to visit. Now, this information will be very useful. I think, and also the presentation by National Treasury, of course, always National Treasury is always with us to shed light on the overall performance nationally, but the department goes into specific details. So we will really use this information. When you do such oversight, I think it's important to look into this matter that we know that the Minister of Finance is from our side as appropriation. The Minister of Finance is indicated that the country's fiscal position is not in a position that all of us would like it to be. So project management in a downside economy is an important matter for us. We really want to see whether or not planning goes to the, at the level where it's really do our week with West Indies and so forth and so forth. So shed light. We know most of we know any of that are very good. So we'll deal with those issues. Even some of the things that members raise, I think members' assumption at times is that in public works that does everything. Public works has transformed over a period of time. And also there's decentralization of infrastructure delivery in government. And specific institutions are responsible for certain infrastructure, each at different levels with proper infrastructure. So we'll always be able to deal with those issues. And the recommendation, obviously, we always create a platform where respective departments or provinces will always be in a position to deal with us. This way, I think on the finance side, we'll be dealing with provinces, dealing with the overall picture with regard to provinces. And the finance committee, the select committee. So we do interface with provinces and we take the recommendation that is made. And also the cooperation with the department, with the portfolio committee of education. And thank you, Honorable PG and Honorable members from the portfolio committee and the chairperson of the select committee of education, Ms. Wan, as well as Honorable member Gaela Mkileni and the TDPF and Motara in the SOP. So, thank you very much. We'll use our search as well as the budget office in Parliament to lead to some of the issues that we are facing.